Welcome to the DNA Talks podcast, where we take on the mission of unlocking the code of your genetics. This season is all about you, upgrading your health, not just on the surface, but down to the root cause. Join us as your clinicians at the DNA Company investigate your DNA and beyond. The intention of this podcast is to enhance your lifestyle by changing what is in your control. This does not substitute the medical advice given by your personal doctor, therapist, and other healthcare professionals.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you everyone for being here this evening. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to spend with us, to continue to learn, grow, and be the best that you can be, and using your genetics and your DNA as part of that equation. So thank you. Oh, and by the way, sorry, for those of you who may not know me, my name is Dr. Laura Varden. I'm a functional genomics and holistic health practitioner and an in-house clinician here at the DNA Company. And this is my esteemed colleague here tonight, Dr. Stephanie Nielsen. Could you please introduce yourself?
Good evening. My name is Dr. Stephanie Nielsen. I am a pharmacist by training and was very sick as a child, and no amount of drugs made a difference. It was only through a journey of learning about my DNA, learning about the breaks in that DNA, that I was able to heal. And it has been a wonderful journey to learn that our bodies are these amazing templates, and we can manipulate within the templates. So I'm relatively new to the DNA Company, though I'm not new to DNA, and I am just so pleased to be with such a forward-moving company that is really making things happen, helping people understand the power of understanding their unique DNA, their unique blueprint, and putting it into action to maximize their lifestyle.
Thanks. And what we want to do tonight is we are going to be talking to you about how impactful that food diet is to your body. The fact that when what you put into your body, and not just food, but the water and the air and the thoughts and everything, really affect how your body works, whether it's going to work optimally or suboptimally. But underlying everything is your genetics, is your DNA. And this is where we help you to have that blueprint, to be able to look at that map and see where the roads are and where pitfalls may be, where trees may be down, and you don't want to go down that path, and you want to go down a better path. And that's what we're here to help you to do, focusing on diet and nutrition. So one of the first things that we want to discuss is the fact that everyone has the capacity for healing. And this is really important, because when you think about food, Hippocrates said, "Let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food." And truly, that is why we have it, to obtain those essential nutrients in order for our bodies, giving it the building blocks to heal, because we are always in a state of healing. We just have to get out of its way. Our bodies know what to do, but we also have to provide our bodies those basic building blocks, those nutrients, in order to heal. Just like a carpenter building a house, you could have the best carpenter in the world that could build the most beautiful structures. But if he doesn't have the wood, if he doesn't have a hammer or nails, he's not going to be building a very strong or good structure. So you need to provide your body, your natural carpenter, those tools in which to build that beautiful, perfect temple that is your body. So with that, I would like to dive into the importance of having those building blocks, because we can't just have any building blocks. We can't, you know, give the carpenter wood that is full of ants and is weak, right? We need to provide our carpenter, our body, with good quality nutrients, with quality air, with quality water, with quality food. Unfortunately, nowadays, our food is not as nutritionally dense as it used to be 50 years ago, you know, definitely not 100 or a couple hundred years ago. So it is something that, because of the way that we have had our monoculture, monocropping, and depleting our soils of nutrients, not having our food that is grown to be as nutrient dense, we oftentimes do have to supplement. So even though, and many of you, if you've had me as working with me as your functional practitioner, you hear me say, I like to lean into using food first. But again, because it is not as nutrient dense, we do oftentimes have to lean into the supplementation. And it's a wonderful thing that we are now able to have a personalized supplementation line for you based on your genetics, based on your needs. And that is our new Black Label supplementation. So just wanted to throw that out there. But I wanted to hear from Dr. Stephanie about her thoughts on our food today and what she feels is important, so she can let you know when it comes to health and nutrition.
So thank you, Laura. And I love your analogy of a carpenter. One that I use a lot with my clients is, what is the most fabulous car you can think of? The one that you would, your dream vehicle, what vehicle would you like to be riding around in? Is it a Mercedes? Is it a Bugatti? Maybe it's a great Honda. What is it that you wanted, would you love to have? And a lot of people will spend $10, $20, $30, $50, $100,000 on this vehicle. So I'm going to ask you, you've got your dream vehicle. Would you take it to the cheapest mechanic? No. Would you put in the cheapest gas? No. Would you ignore it? Lamborghini asked. No, you wouldn't. Why wouldn't you? Because we put value. We attached a very large dollar value, and so we take care of it. Okay, here's a Honda CR-V hybrid sport. Awesome. But let me ask you this. Are cars replaceable? Yes. How long did you hold your last one? A couple years, maybe 10 years. You know, they're replaceable. But this temple that we have is renewable, but not replaceable. So why is it we put the cheapest food, the cheapest fuel, maybe fake? People say, well, real food is expensive, or I don't know the right thing. Or a lot of my clients say, I eat great. But then we start looking at either chemical laden, artificial, out of a package. And what happens with that is we don't realize that we're not getting nutrient-dense foods. So the nutrient-dense foods, and Laura and I will talk about those tonight, are the things that are going to give your temple that thing that is more precious than your Harley or your Lamborghini. And it also is a renewable resource. So I want you to look at quality and less quantity. Oftentimes we eat the cheaper foods because we don't get satisfied. And so we go through a bag of potato chips or a bag of cookies. Now, neither Laura or I are going to tell you, you can't have buns and cheese. But most of you are here because you either have a health issue or you want to make the best and the most of what you've got. And knowing your DNA and what works for your body is optimal. Now, my family came from a family of farmers, and I can tell you, they used old-fashioned methods and could not keep up with the big guys. So they started using the new modern method, but the quality of the product would go down. I can remember my uncles and my father talking about, well, yields are high, but it just doesn't taste right. Or yields are high, but you know, we're having to do a lot more with pesticides and herbicides. Those pesticides and herbicides, we now know, damage not only the crops and the soil, but they damage our internal soil or our microbiome. So I think we're going to get in tonight a little bit about how you can choose from wherever you are to where you want to go, how you can choose a higher quality food for your body and your situation.
something that we want to discuss is in your reports, and, you know, you could throw out, you know, if you've already had your DNA done, or maybe you haven't yet and you're thinking, gosh, maybe, you know, is this something that I want to do? Well, I want to tell you that this provides a more information. It's like you are this big puzzle and you want to get all the pieces together to get to see the full picture that is you. So that way you can best work this beautiful image. And so your DNA is a big piece of that puzzle that helps you to hone in and give you more information. So that way you aren't just throwing spaghetti at a wall and seeing what sticks, that you're saying, oh, okay, well, in my genetics, it says that, you know, maybe fats, you know, I need to have less saturated fats, or I'm not dealing, I don't break down carbohydrates as well. And, you know, that I need to structure my eating habits or what's on my plate differently. Your genetics can do that. And a couple of words I want to explain tonight, something that we look at when we are reviewing the diet and nutrition section of your reports. They are nutrigenetics and nutrigenomics. Now, when we are dealing with those two words, which you may or may not have heard before, you can throw in the chat if you've heard them, if you're familiar with what they are, or if you don't. But oftentimes, the words nutrigenetics and nutrigenomics are interchanged, but they're actually very different things. Well, both deal with the interplay of nutrients and genes. Nutrigenetics actually looks at the genes and the variations within our genes and how they influence the efficiency, the absorption, and activation of the nutrients we take in. Where nutrigenomics, that looks at how those nutrients come back and interact with the genes, affecting gene expression. It's like two sides of the same coin. And it's very important because of the nutrients you are taking in, how good are you at utilizing, breaking down and utilizing those nutrients? And I'm not just talking micronutrients, okay, your vitamins A, zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D, but your macros as well, your fats, your carbohydrates, your proteins. And then how does that work in your system? All of this does play a factor in your genetic profile. So I would like to ask Dr. Stephanie how she looks at nutrition coming in, and what do you do when you work with your clients as far as the nutrigenetics? And actually, I just see a question about saying again the two words. So it's nutrigenetics, and that's looking at the genes, the variations of the genes, and how they influence the efficiency, absorption, and activation of the nutrients we take in. So how do we, when we eat foods with vitamin D, how do we break that down and utilize it? Where nutrigenomics looks at how those nutrients affect our gene expression, that gets into epigenetics. So how does the vitamin D that we actually absorb then work with our bodies? And we're talking about vitamin D in particular. It's very important when it comes to gut health and our immune system, our mood and behavior, because actually seasonal depression disorder, which a lot of people have during the wintertime, oftentimes is associated with low vitamin D levels. So that's where the nutrigenomics comes in. So I hope that clarified that. So Dr. Stephanie, would you like to add to that?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Try Pectisol Modified Citrus Pectin today and see for yourself how it can help you manage healthy inflammation levels to support your detox and weight loss goals. Listeners get 20% off with code UNPILL20 at ecoeugenics.link/UNPILL. That's ecoeugenics.link/UNPILL.
So one of the things that I really like to do when I'm working with someone or when I'm looking at someone's profile is I want at least 3 to 4 days of whatever your normal diet is, good, bad, or ugly. There's no judgment. And Laura, I know that you would agree with this. There's no judgment. We only want to know what's real. And everybody says, and I'm going to give you this break right now. When they write it all down, good, bad, or ugly, from the morning to the night, and they go, well, this is my normal diet. Everyone says, well, this is normal. Well, it may be more normal than you think, which may be creating some of the things that you didn't realize. So it's like, fine, no problem. This was a special circumstance. Great. But then let's look at the reality of what's causing. So one of my clients had severe constipation, and we talked about that she didn't have a good digestion with her enzymes, nor did she have a good microbiome. So we can look at that foot gene. And so we had to talk about prebiotics, probiotics, probiotic foods, fibers, and there was a whole compilation. And she said, well, okay, but I'm eating fiber because she had oatmeal for breakfast, but she also had problem digesting and she wasn't drinking enough water. So that oatmeal turned to cement. Then she was having yogurt. Well, I'm here to tell you most commercial yogurts, especially if they're fruit flavored, have a lot of gelatin in them and have a lot of sugar. Well, the sugar was feeding the bad bugs, not the good bugs. You may or may not like this, but you're made up of more bugs, parasites, fungi, virus than you are everything else. Our microbiome, whether it's our skin or whether it's our internal microbiome, there are more cooties, bugs, living organisms that make up this organism. And we've got to feed those, but we've got to feed them the right things. How many of you have ever been on an antibiotic? Well, the antibiotic, bio meaning life, kills the bad bugs, but it also kills good bugs. I'm thrilled to say that Western medicine is starting to recognize that because they're good at killing stuff, but they're not good at cleaning up. Part of what we're going to do is show you how you're always in this cycle of killing off, building up, remodeling, rebuilding. So if you've had or heard of SIBO, which is a dysbiosis of the gut, there's a couple different kinds. You didn't get there overnight. You won't get there overnight. But we can look at your DNA and say, gosh, do you need more prebiotics, more probiotics? Do you need more fiber? Do you have more digestive issues? Can you break things down? So I like to use something that's very personal to help people understand. I had a lot of allergies as a kid, and no one could figure out. All they gave me, now remember, I'm a Western trained pharmacist. I'm a board certified clinical nutritionist. I'm a functional genomic practitioner. So Western medicine says symptom stomp. Let's shut down the symptoms, shut down the runny nose, shut down the runny eyes, shut down the sneezing. Antibiotics because she must be sick. Nasal sprays because we've got to stop those mast cells. So I didn't heal. I managed, and a lot of people have cough and cold season or they have allergy season and they shut all that down, but they still don't feel good. Well, what if we can look at your diet? What if we can look at your relationship with food? In my case, I'm allergic to dairy. I'm allergic to gluten. I was an undiagnosed celiac. And at the time, nobody even really knew what celiacs was. But I was raised by a wheat farmer. So our whole livelihood was raised around wheat. And then we also had our own cattle and we had some of our own dairy. But we used store-bought dairy. And so I had this food that should have been healthy, for some people could be healthy, but was the complete wrong thing for mine. I called myself a vegetarian. I was really sugaritarian, a breaditarian, a dessertitarian, a dairyitarian. There were really no vegetables in there. And I got so sick and there was so much inflammation and so much yeast in my body that I ended up developing cancer. Fortunately, I was put on a path by a wonderful nutritionist. I was told myself, go find some little nutritionist. Well, I did. She was 4'11". She was 82 years old. She kicked my butt, but she saved my life. And she put me on a severely restricted diet of real foods, nutrient-dense foods. So as smart as I was in Western medicine, I knew nothing about nutrition. Thus, I went back and got my board certification in clinical nutrition. And this goes back to what Dr. Laura was talking about. Nutrient-dense foods are critical for small amounts that have big wins for you. And maybe we can go into some of those, Laura, some of the ones that you like to recommend. But I want you to all, because we're all biohackers here. We're all interested in how can I be the best version of myself? What is it that you know you eat and you instantly get tired? Think blood sugar dysregulation. I want you to think about getting stuffy or sneezing after you eat. I want you to think about your gut bloats. All of those are symptoms, and symptoms is your body's mechanism to tell you, this is not working for me. Therefore, something's got to shift. And one of the great things is one of our functional genomic practitioners can teach you. And what we hope to do tonight is guide you. If you've got your report already, you can look at, I might have a gluten sensitivity. So how do I avoid that? What do I do? Or I may not process fats as well. You know, Ray talks about monounsaturated fats. I actually can't process them. I need polys. But everybody talks about, but polys are bad because they're all the seed oil. So what I want you to do, think about your own symptoms. Think about your own body. And then let's kind of get Laura and I'll talk about things that you can do based on what you've seen. If you haven't had your test, how fun is that to be able to get in and go, keto worked for my neighbor. She looks great. It doesn't work for me. Why doesn't it work for me? Maybe you can't break those fats down. Laura?
And that is a beautiful segue into what I wanted to cover next. And thank you so much for that story. I mean, you've been through a lot and you are so inspirational for the healing that you have done. Mm-hmm. And something that I tell my clients that we are not what we eat. We are what our gut microbiome breaks down and allows us to absorb. So it's really important that we love our guts and that we take care of it and that we feed the good guys, not the bad guys. So we want to have a really good concentration, a wonderful diversity, and we want the gut to be working for us so we can absorb those delicious, expensive foods that we end up having to buy to eat healthy. So, but working off of what Dr. Stephanie was saying about fats, it's really important, I mean, for us to understand fats, the difference of what fats are. And when we talk about fats, everybody's heard of saturated fats and unsaturated fats. But a lot of times they don't truly understand what the difference is. I'm going to be showing you an image of the difference between saturated and unsaturated fats. They're not just words. When we're talking about saturated and unsaturated fats, it comes down to the chemical structure. And as you can see on the left-hand side, this is a molecule of a saturated fatty acid. Now, what does that mean? It basically means that there are no double bonds between the carbons, which is in this blue line. These are all C's. That's for carbon. H is for hydrogen. O is for oxygen. And when you have the saturated fatty acid, again, there's no double bonds. That's why they're nice and straight. So when they're stacked together, they're tightly stacked. They pack tightly. That's the reason why they are solid at room temperature. They also don't spoil very quickly. And You would find these in like animal meat fats, certain plant oils like palm kernel oil or coconut oil, because coconut oil actually is a mix of saturated and unsaturated fats. You'll also find saturated fats in dairy products, cheese and butter. It's also found in processed meats, as well as in even prepackaged food like crackers, chips, cookies, pastries, things like that. And I want you to realize that not all saturated fats are equal, okay? So, and it's not just butters, okay? Not all butters are equal, because you can have butter that's made from cows in these big dairy farms that never get out of their caged areas. They're pumped full of antibiotics, and that comes out in the milk. It comes out in the butter, as compared to butter from free range cows that actually eat grass and get out and are happy. Okay, very different. So in the saturated fat, that summarize that, and there's nice, beautiful pictures that represent that. Now let's get into unsaturated fats. So unsaturated
fats. Before you go there, one of the things that I hear people say is, yeah, but real food costs so much. There's a bigger expense. And I want you to know, wherever you are, we want you just to be able to take one step forward. If you're currently eating country crock, that's fake. So if you got back to real butter, but you said, I can't buy the organic Kerrygold or whatever, look for something that says RBC free. Okay, so recombinant bovine hormone, RBH free. If you went from country crock to a butter that's RBH free, that's a huge step forward. RBH takes a cow from making a gallon a day to making 4 gallons a day. That hormone goes in, and that's why we've got young girls now going through their menses or beginning their cycles at 7, 8, 9, rather than 12, 13, 14, because the chickens are pumped full of hormones, and most kids eat chicken or chicken nuggets, and then they also are drinking milk. One step forward. So if you can't go all the way, you don't have a little local farm, you don't want to have raw milk, that's cool. That's cool. Just make sure that does it even have to be organic? No, that's ideal, but organic doesn't even mean as much as it used to. But make sure it's RBH free. That's a big step forward. Local and seasonal, that's a big step forward. Know where it came from, so it's not being commuted long ways and you have no idea, like Laura was talking about. Maybe they're just locked in a pen all day. They don't see any sunshine. They're not getting their own vitamin D. They're being fed diets to produce milk, but not to produce health. I laugh. You guys may not like this, but when you have poor quality milk and you have processed sugar or high fructose corn syrup and you put it together, what do you get? Pus and sugar, and that's what we call frozen yogurt. So any of you who love frozen yogurt, check the ingredients. You may rethink them.
Thank you for that clarity, for sure. So kind of jumping back into saturated and unsaturated fats. So looking at the right-hand side, the unsaturated fatty acid tail, the reason why it is unsaturated is because it has one or more double bonds. So these red double bonds there, okay? When you have a double bond in between your carbons, it puts a kink in the tail, these kinks. And so when they are close together, it leaves space. This is why they are usually liquid at room temperature. But the thing is, they can also spoil more quickly or become rancid, because at these double bond areas, it allows for oxidation to occur more readily. That chemical process that oxidizes things, and that's what causes that rancidity. So when we're talking about what products are unsaturated fats, olive oils are unsaturated fats. They're monounsaturated, as are several of the other oils like seed oils. Those are polyunsaturated. Now, the difference between mono and poly, mono meaning one, poly meaning many, meaning one double bond or many double bonds. So it is in these double bonds that the oxidization can occur. So even in a really good, expensive olive oil, if you open that up and smell it, and if it smells off, that's because it's becoming rancid. That is going to be inflammatory in your system. So if you're going to spend a lot of money on really good olive oil, make sure you use it. Don't let it sit in a cupboard for 3 years. When you're talking about these olive oils, because they have a lower smoke point, you also don't want to be cooking with them. Use them as a finishing oil. Use them, you know, as a salad dressing. You want to use more of your saturated fats, you know, using tallow or butter or something, you know, if you're going to be cooking, you know, with any types of fats, or even avocado oil, because the smoke point is actually 400 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, where the olive oil is much lower. So just
Let's talk about that for a second. So okay. How many of you, extra virgin olive oil, you hear about how great that is. Real extra virgin olive oil is going to be a bright, vibrant green. And as Laura said, it has a low smoke point. So it's going to make, if you're cooking with it, it's going to put off a lot of smoke. Every time you have that smoke, it begins to damage. Every time you have damage, you have free radicals. Every time you have free radicals, you're speeding up kind of the negative cycle of what your body then has to go put that fire out. So when Laura said, if you're going to make your salad dressing, if you're going to drizzle it over your vegetables, make sure that you don't cook with those. Now, they have some refined olive oil that's very yellow. They call it extra light instead of extra virgin. Extra light has a higher smoking point. But many of you may know, or your doctors may tell you, look, you've got high cholesterol. Stay away from saturated fats. You may remember back many, many years ago, there was a lot of studies done on saturated fat. Saturated fat, when they did those original studies, one of the original studies was called the Framingham study. And they showed people with the highest levels of cholesterol then were eating a lot of saturated fats. Well, here's what we've learned from since then. This was way back in the 70s or 80s. They took the cholesterol from these people's blood. They then stored it over the weekend, and they found that it broke down and damaged. So they hydrogenated it, okay? So they made it like Crisco. They made it hard and solid. They then studied the hydrogenated fats and found that they got negative consequences. So it's not that high cholesterol was the issue. It was the damaged fats. What causes heart disease? Damaged fats and sugar. We have way too much sugar in our diet. You may say, I don't add sugar, I don't eat sugar. Look at your ketchup, look at your mayonnaise or your Miracle Whip, look at your salad dressings, look at your, maybe you love to have a spinach and goat cheese, but it has cranberries or sugared pecans on it. There is a lot more sugar in your diet than you're realizing. So what we want you to do, let's go back, do that 3 to 4 day, you know, journal and look, where do I have hidden sugar? Where do I have hidden damaged fats? So fast forward almost 40 years, they went back and analyzed all the people that were still alive from that original study. Believe it or not, the ones with the highest cholesterol that were eating animal fats ended up having small amounts of plaquing, but were still alive. Why? Cholesterol is the mother hormone. You use it to repair your brain. You use it as to make all of your sex hormones. You use it to repair your skin. So if we're always taking our cholesterol down based on Western medicine, not on your genetics. Now, I'm not saying some people don't need to have lower. So hear me. I'm saying you need to know, like I have a lot of vascular inflammation. So I choose my fats carefully. I restrict my sugars. Doesn't mean I still can't have a little bit of fruit. It's just I lean more towards savory foods now than I did sweet foods because I leaned towards sweet for so long. And it was that whole burnout cycle. So what fats are you using? What do you cook with? What do you consume? What's in your salad dressings? What do you put on your toast? Real is always best. Live food, live body. Live food, live body. A butter that comes from a cow that it does not have recombinant bovine hormone is going to be a real food that your body knows what to do with. In fact, you may not know, but what did all your grandparents or great-grandparents used to eat? They ate eggs, they ate butter, they ate steak, they ate local, they ate off their farm. Do you know there was no recorded heart attack until 1918? Guess what happened in 1915? The vegetable food processors had all this extra vegetable oil. They sold it to the auto industry. It gummed up the engines because it ran hot and made all the cylinders stick. And they said, oh, the auto industry said, we don't want to use your stuff. It was then the USDA made it generally recommended as safe, which is called GRAS status. They started putting it in human food. From 15 to 18, there was a huge upsurge into processed foods. The first heart attack happened in 1918 because we had now put these low smoke point, hydrogenated, and damaged and rancid oils into our food supply. And our body packed it away into that atherosclerotic plaque. What does all of this get back to? It gets back to live food, live body, dead food, dead body. Choose your food carefully based on your genome, the things your body likes and doesn't like. Now, Laura, I like to say that Western medicine makes each of their body systems like an island. There's the heart island, cardiology. There's the brain island, neurology. There's the female island, you know, gynecology. But what we do is we build bridges to all these islands so that you can go in the whole circle of that whole island and make sure it works. Now, if you go back to the nutrigenomics or the nutrigenetics, I have some bridges that are broken. We all have some bridges that are broken. We can fix that bridge by either, let's say, beta-carotene. Beta-carotene, people think of as vitamin A. It's actually a vitamin A precursor. We know it from carrots, carotene, bright yellow and orange. It has to be converted. If you don't have the gene that can convert it, you need the animal version of a retinol. So knowing your genome, can I process a plant-based vitamin A or do I need an animal-based? Now, depending on someone's preference, depending on someone's philosophy, they may not want to consume butter. So then we're going to give you recommendations on other sources of that retinol that you could get because you can't break the beta carotene down. How do you work with patients who or your clients that are wondering about their personal preferences, their genome? And when they really need something, but they have an internal conflict about consuming that, like organ meats or, you know, animal meats or things.
Well, first, I want to mention for the audience that the gene that Dr. Stephanie was referring to for the vitamin A is the BCMO1 gene. That's beta-carotene monooxygenase 1. And generally, a suboptimal profile would have the G allele, and the optimal would be the A allele. So AA would be optimal, AG or GG would be the suboptimal, where you can't convert the beta carotene into retinol very readily. So generally, I recommend some sort of supplementation. Well, again, food first, get it from your food first. But a lot of times it is from meats, from animal products. And I will say that the highest amount of vitamin A in a natural product would be cod liver oil. Wonderful product, which not only gives you a wonderful source of vitamin A, but it also gives you omega-3s and many other benefits. Yeah, when I have clients who have that internal struggle wanting to take something that I recommend, but it conflicts with some sort of belief system, that's where we get into, why do you have that belief system? What is it that causes you to feel that way? Whether it is, well, I'm a vegetarian or I'm a vegan and I, you know, don't want to eat anything animal. I want to protect them, which I understand. And I actually was a vegan for a few years. And unfortunately, my health reflected negatively because of it. I was not getting the nutrients that I needed. I thought the same way. Forks over knives. I read that book and I was like, I was sold. But the thing is that, again, we have to look at our genes. If you don't convert very well from the products or from the plants and nutrients into the bioavailable form for us, then maybe we should take a look. You should take that internal look into what is most important, your health, what you are doing. Just because you want to be healthy and eat foods that give you the nutrients you need, giving your carpenter the tools that it needs to heal you and to make you vibrant, does not equate to, I am being cruel to animals. If anything, you can think of it, and this is the way that I personally do, that animal is there. And yes, it is giving its life for me to consume the nutrients that it is providing for me. And I honor that animal. I am thankful. I am grateful for the life that it has lived and that it has given to provide me life. I mean, we could get into more of a philosophical aspect, but it really is changing and thinking about where your beliefs are. Why do you have those beliefs? And maybe there just needs to be a slight shift, you know, or say, okay, you don't want to do that. Well, maybe you can take some other type of supplementation, or if that does not fulfill, because a lot of the vitamin A's with retinol are either synthetic, which has their own issues, or they do come from animal products, in which case, okay, so if you don't want to take that, then just know you will be deficient in vitamin A more likely than not, and could therefore have issues further down the line that would reflect that. And vitamin A is very important for eye health, for your immune system, for so many different things. So you really have to put and prioritize what it is that you truly want and how you can rectify that within yourself.
And I know think the most important thing is, we're not here to convince you that one diet is better than another, because everybody's different. We want to work our job, whether it's on here to educate you or whether it's working with clients, is to say, here's your blueprint. Here's how your body handles it. Here's your options. So with the BCMO1 gene, you're either AA, which is homozygous, and that's optimal activation of the beta carotene to the retinol. You're either AG, which is moderate activity, you can convert it, or like in my case, I'm a GG. And that means suboptimal activation. I can't convert. I could eat tons and tons of carrots and I'm going to get this much vitamin A. I started having eye problems. So I went to the more animal-based, lots of butter, organ meats. Guess what? Eyes popped right back. I thought my inflammation was due to my celiacs, and it could have been some gluten exposure, because it used to take me 3 months to recover from an accidental exposure. Now I can recover much quicker. But when I started adding the retinol type sources, because I'm a GG and I was always trying to convert from the beta carotene, my body just couldn't get enough. Another example is, people want plant-based omega-3s. So they say, well, I'm having flax. Flax goes through multiple forms to get down to EPA and DHA. EPA and DHA are how we measure the omega-3s. you only get 2-8% conversion. So normally we want 400 to 700 milligrams of omega-3s if someone wants cardiac benefits and brain benefits. But in order to get that, if you're using flaxseed only, you put 100 milligrams, you're going to get 2-8 milligrams. If you have to go from that 2-8 to 400 and 700, you cannot eat enough flax seeds to get that 400 to 700. And so you may be struggling to get there from there. Now we can use some algae-based things, and there's some other things we can use. But the most important thing you need to know is you make a decision. Does this work with my paradigm? Does it work with my genome? Does it work? Am I seeing results, or I'm not getting the results I want yet? And then you decide, I'm willing to take this baby step or I'm not willing to. And again, we're not here to convince you one way or the other. There's no right or wrong. We want you to have the information so that you can make that decision on maybe I keep a primary plant-based diet, but I take a supplement that, you know, I don't have to eat a piece of meat, but I'm getting those dense nutrients that my body needs to heal.
I'd like to jump over to some of the other genes that looks at our macros, because this is really important. I mean, you know, when we consider, okay, our fats, our carbohydrates, our proteins. So we went through the types of fats, saturated, unsaturated fats. And the gene that we happen to look at in your diet and nutrition report that is relative and informs us about that is your ApoA2. Now, the ApoA2 is actually short for apolipoprotein A2. And what that is, it is the second most abundant protein of the high density lipoprotein particles, your HDLs, okay, considered, oh, your good cholesterol. When we're talking about this, it really is associated, I mean, to make it more relative to you people of what you're looking at, that this informs us the association of weight gain or fat gain to fat consumption. Okay. So if you have suboptimal version of ApoA2, which would be the GG, or having a G in there, more so GG, you have an increased association of fat gain to fat consumption, mainly in saturated fats. So when we're looking at that, now obviously there are other genes that are taken into account, but this is something that you shouldn't have, you know, 2 tablespoons of butter in your coffee every morning and a pat of butter on your vegetables and cooking with butter and having, you know, a lot of saturated fats all day, because you will end up gaining weight from that, even though it is a Kerrygold and, you know, all of these other versions. You know, it doesn't matter because of how your genes are and how they break down and utilize that fat. That is what you'd be looking at.
So if you have an ApoA2 and you're a GG, that's a weight gain. So those that are AG or GG might get on a keto diet and find they're gaining weight rather than losing weight. Okay. And you're like, how come everybody else I know is losing weight? They don't even have to try. They're so big into their coconut creamer, their MCT oil, their butter. Don't get me wrong, I love it all too. But then I go, because again, suboptimal utilization, my nutrigenomics, I don't process it. Maybe you don't process it. So you're going to want to pull your DNA profile out and look, can I process those or can I not? Or do I need to have a moderate intake to that relative to other substances?
So if you happen to have a GG, a homozygous version of your ApoA2, you're probably not a candidate for a keto diet. So keep that in mind. And the next area that we usually look at works into your starches, into the carbohydrates. This is the AMY1 gene, and that is short for amylase. Basically, that is the enzyme that helps to break down carbohydrates specifically in the mouth, because there's an AMY1 gene for the amylase, and there's also an AME2, but that is created in the pancreas. We focus on the one in the mouth, in the saliva, because that is where digestion begins. So generally what we're doing is we're looking at how many copies you have, even though the gene itself will either be an AA, AT, or a TT, TT being optimal, AA being suboptimal. What that tells us is it tells us relatively how many copies of the gene you have. So when you have AT allele, that says you have more copies, because you can have anywhere from 2 to 17 copies of the AME1 gene. So again, if you have a T in there, you have more copies. So a TT, you're closer to that 17 copies. So you're able to break down those carbohydrates, those starches, much more readily. And what that equates to is that you would have an increased starch metabolism if it was optimal, if it was TT, and therefore a decreased weight gain to starch consumption. So you could eat, you know, more of starchy foods and not gain weight as readily. So this can work into thinking of vegetarian diets or choosing the vegetables that you use. If you're doing a lot of root vegetables or something and you're suboptimal and gaining weight, that's probably why. So keep that in mind as well for choosing the types of vegetables that you use or that you take in, that they are of the carbohydrates, which, by the way, carbohydrates are not just starches, breads and potatoes and everything else. Carbohydrates include vegetables, fruits, your fibrous foods. So we kind of have to rework the meaning of when we say carbohydrates, that we're talking about all carbohydrates, which are basically sugar molecules all, you know, clumped together that create it. But you want the complex carbohydrates. That is your fruits and your vegetables. Those quick carbs, simple carbohydrates, are the smaller molecular structure that break down much more readily. Those are your starches. Those turn to sugar much more readily. And that and your TCF7L2 work very close together, because your TCF7L2 gene works with the way that you utilize insulin and your insulin response. And of course, carbohydrates breaking down to sugar, sugar in the blood, you need to have insulin to get the sugar from the bloodstream into the cells. So it's really this beautiful orchestra all working together. It's not just one instrument playing, yet that can be and make a beautiful sound. When we start adding in the other players, it really works very well together. And we have to be aware of how they are playing. Are they out of tune? What do we need to do to make them in tune, so that way we can have this beautiful music that our body is?
Laura, I love how you talked about the AME gene and how the starches break down into sugar. So I want you guys to really hear what she said. And I'm going to say it again. When you have, say, a sweet potato, which is a good complex carb, the starch, it's a bag of starch. Starch is nothing more than a string. Think of a string of pearls, a string of sugars. And do they break down into a single pearl or little chunks of pearls? Those are the types of sugars they break down to. That plays into the TCFL. TCF7L2. Yep. In that the insulin goes up. So when we have insulin, insulin is either going to put you in storage mode, you'll be in burn mode, or you'll be in starvation mode. If you have that string of sugar, string of the starch that breaks off into sugars, your blood sugar goes up, all of a sudden insulin is released, and it's going to gobble it up and pack it away. That's why some people pack on so much fat, because that sugar gets turned into stored fat, glycogen, and they gain when they have the carbohydrates. So what if your insulin doesn't respond? What if there's all this sugar around and the insulin goes, eh, eh, because it's either burnt out, it's tired, you have had so much sugar constantly in your diet that it no longer even, it desensitizes to it, that's when you increase your risk of type 2 diabetes. So how many of out there have been told you're pre-diabetic? What they're saying is we need to look at your TCF7L2. Are you suboptimal in your insulin response? Is your insulin resistance going high because there's this constant bombardment? Or do we need to help you look at foods that create a lower insulin response? Now, let me also ask you, have you seen the little devices that people are wearing on the back of their arms? Some of you may have them right now, continuous glucose monitors. They're great whether you do it continually because you have diabetes issues or blood sugar issues or resistance issues, but they're also great if you do them intermittently. If you just cannot get a hold of your blood sugar, to do this for a month or two or even a couple weeks, because if you have to pay out of pocket, they're not inexpensive, but you can get an idea where somebody says, oh, you know, sweet potatoes or parsnips, root vegetables, you know, are good at their complex carbs, but they may spike your blood sugar way up high and they don't work for you. Okay. And you'll be able to see that. Many of you can feel it. You can feel you're eating lunch, you eat too many carbs, and then you drop. What do they always say? If you're at a seminar, the one spot that somebody doesn't want to take on the stage is the first spot right after lunch, because everybody went out and they, you know, grabbed their potato chips and grabbed their sandwich and maybe they had a cookie because they're, you know, splurging because they're at a seminar. And then they come back in and go like this. That's a room full of people who don't have good insulin control. So we want you to know, can I have oatmeal for breakfast? Or maybe I need to have leftover dinner, or maybe I need to have eggs or a piece of steak. What do you need to do to keep that blood sugar in that sustained system where you are optimal? Optimal at the burn to keep the weight off, optimal at the burn to get the weight off, or optimal to keep that brain function. You know what? I'd rather wear one size larger pants, but keep this sharp than I'm worried about, you know, I can get in the smallest pair of jeans that I can get into, but my brain's loopy. This is all about hormone control, blood sugar control, and you feeling fabulous.
And it's also really important for us to be metabolically flexible, that we can use sugar for fuel as well as fat for fuel. A lot of us, we're just using the sugar and constantly keeping a sugar supply going between the sugar we're actually taking in from our foods, you know, that's added sugar, but also from the carbohydrates, especially the starches, that fast sugar amount where it's like our bodies are like, oh, we've got a lot of sugar. Let's just use this. And it's not using fat. It forgets that, oh, wait a minute. That is fuel too. And it actually holds a lot of energy. And then we start gaining weight. And then it makes you constantly want to crave sugar because that's the only fuel it thinks that it needs. And this is where intermittent fasting can come in, and also fasting in itself. And, you know, we've had other seminars and summits that we have done talking about fasting. So it's very, very important that we train our bodies to use fat for fuel as well as sugar for fuel, that we can vacillate back and forth. And that way it will burn the fuel, the fat stores for fuel, because it'll know it's got that. And you won't be as hungry either. You won't be, you know, craving that sugar or going, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. I ate 2 hours ago, but I need food. You would actually feel very good getting from meal to meal and not have those feelings like your brain isn't working and you have no energy.
One thing that people should know is they get quick energy from sugar. And the energy molecule is ATP. You guys have probably heard that. It's a unit of energy. So ATP, every sugar molecule gives you two ATP, so two bits of energy. But every fat molecule you burn gives you 16 ATP. So again, don't be afraid of fat, because fat, when it's used properly, especially when we know how you break it down and which fats are optimal for you, will help you go into the burn and help you be more productive, be more clear, and keep your insulin stable.
And I did see a couple questions coming in about people wanting to know about the TCF7L2 versions. And it's the T version. TT is suboptimal. GG is optimal, meaning that you have optimal insulin response and a decreased risk for type 2 diabetes, where the TT you don't utilize and have a good insulin response, genetically speaking, and you have a risk, not diagnostic, you have a risk of type 2 diabetes. So just know you have the power, because you are now getting the map, the blueprint of going, I now know I need to be careful with fats, or I need to be careful with starches, or I need to, you know, watch certain things that I eat. That can help you change the context and go down the path of not getting diabetes. Or even if you are pre-diabetic, or if you are diabetic, to back you up out of that state and get you into a state of health. And yes, you can do that. I actually used to be pre-diabetic, and I am no longer. So, and I have friends who actually were diabetic and are no longer, because of making the choices and the changes in their lifestyle and their diet. So you can heal yourself. I want to touch on very quickly about our last macro, proteins. Now, I do want to say, when it comes to proteins, there aren't any particular genes, functionally speaking, that say, okay, well, you should have this amount of protein or this type of protein. We don't have that kind of information. So what we do is we generally look at, and this is reflected in your reports, we look at how you prepare your proteins, because it's more about having toxins, introducing more toxins into the system. Because the way you prepare protein, oftentimes, and I'll use steak, oftentimes, what do? Throw it on a grill. You're flame broiling it, or you are searing it, and you get that black crusty. Yes, it can taste good and everything else, but these are toxins to your body. These are carcinogenic, okay, meaning cancer causing. So you want to make sure not to be introducing more toxins into the system in the way that you are preparing your protein. Also with fish, larger fish, yes. Salmon, fantastic. Tuna, wonderful. Cod, also wonderful. But unfortunately, our seas are full of toxins, especially heavy metals, specifically mercury. So you need to be careful about how much you eat of that, even though you, yes, you get wonderful nutrients, great omega-3s from salmon, but also realize, depending on where it's caught from, and you want to get like wild caught, not farm raised, that is of good quality, but that realizing, yeah, there's probably some mercury in there. So you don't want to be having it every night, 7 days a week. Okay. You know, a couple times a night, or a couple times a week, I mean, you know, to help lower that toxic load. And also looking at smaller fish, mackerel, sardines, you know, because these are lower on the food chain. They also don't live very long, so they're not going to have as high of a mercury load. So yet they are a fantastic source of protein, and they have wonderful omega-3s and other fats and other nutrients for your body. So keeping those things in mind are very important and can help with that protein. Now, when it comes to vegetarians, how and what do you do? Well, yes, you've got legumes, you have other sources, soy and other sources of protein in vegetables. Genes that you should be aware of that can make it more problematic when it comes to a vegetarian diet is the methylation pathway. This works into detoxification. It also works into the fact that several of the vegetables have anti-nutrients. And you're thinking, oh goodness, okay, what are anti-nutrients? Anti-nutrients are things like lectins, oxalates, phytates. These types of compounds actually block the uptake of the good nutrients that we need. So even though you can have like these superfoods that are wonderful, I mean, even sweet potatoes, yes, I eat sweet potatoes, but yes, they have oxalates. They can cause inflammation. To people who are more sensitive to oxalates and to, you know, these types of anti-nutrients, lectins, that's not necessarily good for them. Maybe they shouldn't be on a vegetarian diet, or maybe they have got some gut issues that need to be repaired before they can re-enter that into their diet. It might be something that they may not ever be able to be, but this is why you should work with a practitioner that can help you walk through, figure out what the underlying issue is, whether it's genetics, epigenetics, you know, due to other traumatic issues or, you know, stress or whatever the case may be. If you have gut issues, you've got to repair the gut. You know, as we were talking, Dr. Stephanie was talking about initially at the top of the this session, that the gut is very, very important. And I also said, you know, if you've got a leaky gut or if your gut microbiome is dysregulated, you're not going to be absorbing the good nutrients anyway, not very well. So thank you so much. I appreciate you spending your time with us this evening, for you taking this extra time to learn and invest in yourself. Dr. Stephanie, would you like to say some final words?
I just want to thank you for your brilliance. I want to thank you for letting me come on with you tonight. You know, I appreciate everyone at the DNA company. And I saw it way, way back where people said that they had taken other DNA tests, but this was the most utilizable compilation of data that they've had, so that whether they can understand their moods, they can understand their diets, they can understand potential health problems, or they can remediate health problems. The company works so hard to not just be cutting edge, but bleeding edge. I just feel really privileged to have been invited to be on here tonight and to be with you. And we just look forward to each and every one of you living your best life, feeling the best. And, you know, we hope to be one tool in your tool bag for getting to where you want to go with your health.
And I want to thank you so much, Dr. Stephanie, for joining me tonight, for us, you know, presenting. You have been absolutely fabulous. I love the information, the stories, just wonderful. And I certainly expect that you will be doing more of these.
So, thank you
again. Have a wonderful evening, everyone.
Good night. God bless everybody.